me here, for the invitation. It's a pleasure to tell you about the work I've been doing the last year in collaboration with Cliff Chung and with Jesse Taylor. And my talk will be based on these two papers from April, and I will mention maybe at the end some future developments, which we are currently doing. And the goal of my talk is to mostly explain the content of paper one, which is setting the general framework. Paper two will be just an application of this framework to the calculation of fermion spectra in supergravity. Okay, so let me start from the motivation. Our motivation was to find the framework to correctly compute the spectra and the interaction for particles in SUSY theories. And in the limit of global SUSY, we know that this task is simplified a lot by the so-called superspace formalism, where the ordinary for space-time, four-dimensional space-time is augmented by additional fermionic directions, which is this Grassmann variable theta. But when we introduce gravitational interaction, so when in taking into account supergravity effects, the superspace picture is complicated by the introduction of a gravitational interaction. And what everybody usually does is to work in components. So take the component Lagrangian of supergravity and perform very long and tedious calculation in components. So our goal, the goal of our work, and I can write here on my first slide, is to our goal is to find a simplified framework to perform SUGRA calculations. By simplified framework, I mean that we can do calculation for interactions and spectra for matter fields without considering the gravity supermultiplet. So the gravity multiplet in this gauge, I will explain what I mean in a second, but in this gauge, the gravity multiplet is decoupled. And we want this framework to keep into account all the relevant gravitational effects relevant at colliders and in the early universe cosmology, so effects proportional to the gravitational mass. Okay, so how do we proceed? Our starting point is the following result, which dates back to the paper by Kaku et al. Around 78, and is that the observation that Poincaré supergravity can be derived as a gauge fixing of conformal SUGRA. Poincaré supergravity is the take the Poincaré group plus supersymmetry, and then you take the local version of the symmetry. So you make all the global symmetry local. So it's the conventional supergravity. Poincaré just refers to the group. So translation, diffeomorphism, Lorentz transformation, and local supersymmetry.
But gravity is not gauging the Poincaré part. Gravity is gauging the translation.
Right, yes. But by Poincaré SUGRA, I really mean SUGRA, supergravity. It's what they call it in these papers. With our paper, we call minimal SUGRA. It's just, okay. I will not go into the details of the gauge fixing because this is a very known result from over 30 years ago, and also because it's very complicated. So I will give you an analogy which is much simpler. Yes?
There's also, you mentioned you can do everything in component fields.
Right.
But I think there's also something called the tensor formalism for
There is a description of supergravity with superspace variable, but the superspace coordinates are not the same as the global, the theta of the global SUSY.
No, I think I mean something else.
Well, the tensor calculus?
Tensor calculus.
Yeah, but that's still in components. What we want to use is to use the theta of global superspace.
Okay.
With the same superspace we use in global SUSY. That's our goal.
Sorry, and this results in a really easy gauge mixing. Is it gauging the whole conformal group?
You are gauging the extra gauge symmetry, the extra with respect to the minimal Sugra gauge.
So there's one additional.
I will list the gauge. I will list all the gauge symmetries, and I will tell you what I'm going to fix in a second. I just want to give you an analogy with the Einstein gravity, very simple. Yes, no problem. Let's consider the Einstein-Hilbert action, which I'm working in another unit where I'm plant this one. So this is the action for the Einstein gravity. This action is not scaling by. In particular, if I perform this transformation on the metric, where lambda is a parameter which depends on the space-time coordinates, this action is not invariant. But we can make this action invariant just by a compensator field phi, which is a scalar field phi, and the new Lagrangian I get is so if I take the field content of Einstein gravity, I introduce an additional scalar field phi, the resulting Lagrangian I get is scale invariant, where now the field phi transforms like this. And I recover Einstein gravity by gauge fixing this additional scale symmetry. So in this case, the gauge fixing is phi constant equal to square root of 3. So that is the spirit. We start from a theory which has an additional symmetry, but also additional field content. In the case of the Einstein gravity, we have additional scale invariants, but we have an additional scalar field. We gauge fix the additional symmetry, and we recover the theory. So that's the way it works in the above blackboard. And now let's go back to the Sugra case. And in the Sugra case, so the symmetry, the extra so this is about the question you asked before. We have all the symmetries of supergravity plus the additional symmetry of the superconformal group, which are So in the example in the above blackboard was really simple. It was Einstein plus scale invariance. Now I'm taking supergravity plus these extra symmetries. And I do not introduce an additional scalar field, but I introduce an additional supermultiplet, because this is the supersymmetric equivalent of phi. And this additional field is called conformal compensator, phi. So the way the gauge fixing works in this case is by considering this extra gauge redundancy and fix these four symmetries. And fixing these symmetries will result in fixing the expression for phi as I fixed before the equation, the expression for the scalar phi. So this is the analogous in the supersymmetric case. And I will not go into the details because these are well known at all, so they are very complicated. I will just write down the final result. So what is the Lagrangian as a function of the matter fields, as a function of the gravity multiplet, as a function of phi. And the, so I'll use the Bob Blackboard. Yeah, there is another one. Yeah. I would like to use four, so everything will always be visible for you. So this is okay. So now what I will do, I will write down a Lagrangian, which is invariant under supergravity plus these symmetries, which will be also function of phi. And that will be our starting point. So the Lagrangian is, now I will write down the Lagrangian and then I will explain. Okay, so this is the Lagrangian for the theory written in this blackboard, where phi is the conformal compensator, which appears here and here. K is the Kähler potential, which is function of the matter, the chiral multiplet and the vector multiplet, depending on the matter content of our model and on the gauge symmetries. W is the superpotential, which is an holomorphic function of the chiral superfields. And F is the gauge kinetic function, which is again an holomorphic function of the chiral field. And W alpha is the familiar gauge piece for the supersymmetric Lagrangian. What it is new here are these dots pieces, which are known. And they are listed in this review about the tensor calculus, which was the formalism we were referring to before. Yes? Yes?
So for the conformal compensator in the three term theory, you have 1 degree of freedom and it responds in this way. Here you have, is this a chiral superfield? Or what?
It's a chiral superfield, but the counting of degrees of freedom, I can make the counting of degrees of freedom and it works. So it's a chiral superfield, and you can see that the scalar component is a pure gauge mode. You can gauge fix. The fermionic component of this chiral superfield is the pure gauge mode. You can fix. And the F component will be the scalar auxiliary field of minimal supergravity. Because conformal supergravity has less gauge, less auxiliary field. And when you recover the minimal supergravity, some gauge auxiliary fields will come from here.
Yes,
so.
In terms of the symmetry transformation that you want to include now.
Oh, yes.
It's not clear how you can have one of those things within this single phi.
And phi is charged under this, it's under all of this. But now the transformation properties are very long and complicated. But.
Right, but shouldn't you have as many degrees of freedom of compensator as you have fake symmetries that you've added? So that you said the counting works, but if you can just.
Right, so. You
help us understand it a little better.
I understand your question. So what you do, you use, these are many components, right? So the scalar component of phi, you gauge fix by gauge fixing these two transformations. And there are 2 degrees of freedom.
And okay, both of those are just real, they don't have a scalar individual. Okay.
And you fix the fermionic.
Susie has a spinner index, right?
This
or
Susie.
Not.
Yes. This is the spinner, and you fix with the spinner the fermionic generator. And I was going to list these things.
Oh, okay.
And then you fix the special conformal transformation by setting the gauge field of the dilatation to zero. Because you also have gauge fields for these gauge symmetries, and you have to gauge fix also this. And you can check that these two have algebraic equation of motion. This Q is fixed by zero by this gauge fixing, and this one will be the vector superfield of supergravity, the gravity multiplet.
So that's what I'm confused about. You're saying the dilatation also that last part is rather visible.
This one?
Yeah.
So this is gauge fixed by putting the dilatation gauge field to zero. That's why you get fixed the special transformation.
So you first give yourself the freedom to have the dilatation by having the scalar component?
Right, and then you gauge fix the gauge field. Because the gauge field of dilatation is charged under this. So we can discuss more about it. The counting on the degrees of freedom works.
Sorry, are you adding gauge fields for each one of these, or just?
Yes, yes. There is a gauge field for each one of this group, but these two gauge fields have algebraic equations of motions, so they will be function of other.
So then the way the model works, I see.
It's very complicated.
So we should think of the gauge fields associated with dilatation as with each one of those as almost making the counting work with the
symmetries. But
then those algebraic equations of motion mean you
exactly so
one extra scalar plus.
These two have algebraic equations.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
No problem. Is there any other question? Okay. So what I was saying here is that you can write a Lagrangian which has all of that invariance, all of the symmetries. But here we have the theta, which is the global SUSY superspace. So there are versions of Sugra where the superspace has inside the theta variable also the components of the gravity supermultiply. But whenever I theta, and in this talk, theta will always be the theta of global SUSY. And this is not the full story because there are additional pieces, dot, 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 which will have the graviton, for example, the gravitino, and the auxiliary fields. And these, there are many operators here. They are all listed in this review. And I will not write all of them because they are long and complicated. I will just present to you three of them, which are the ones creating problems for calculations, and which will prevent, which used to prevent by doing calculation in superspace. So let's go back to the gauge fixing and let's summarize how you usually do the gauge fixing. Oops. So the gauge fixing, okay, let's write phi in components. So phi is a Carrot superfield, there is a scalar piece, there is a fermion piece, and there is a F piece. And we use this normalization where sigma is in all the components. That's just a definition of the way we parameters like that. The reason why we use the parameterization is because now we can check and we can write in a very simple way the transformation properties of phi under the extra gauge of conformal Sugra. And when I perform a combined transformation, D and A, so dilatation and chiral rotation, what I get is that, so sigma goes to e to the lambda, where lambda is a complex number. The real part comes from D, and the imaginary part comes from A. What else? There is conformal SUSY, and we can see that under the conformal SUSY, the fermionic piece, once we remove the scalar normalization, simply shift by chi, where chi is the parameter, transformation parameter of S. And so what we see from these two equations is that sigma and I call zeta here so sigma and zeta are pure gauge mode. So they can be set to any value of the field of the theory by an appropriate gauge fixing. The same is not true for F. F is not a pure gauge mode. F will be the scalar auxiliary field of the gravity multiplet once I get fixed to supergravity. Okay, so starting from this observation, we can now see the simplest possibility for the gate fixing. Right, right, so it's not independent. I'm not free to put it to zero or to any value I want, exactly. Yes. Okay. So, most simple gauge fixing we can imagine is the following. I put the imaginary part of sigma to zero and I put sigma to one. I have this freedom by an appropriate choice of lambda. And I can completely kill, if I want, the fermionic component. And I end up with this expression for the conformal compensator, which doesn't have any fermion piece. The scalar piece is trivial, it's just one. And there is the F component, which is Fi. So this is the gauge fixing which is usually used and the one you may be familiar with. And this gauge fixing has some problem. And the reason of this problem is that once we choose that gauge fixing and we are going, and if we check the dots pieces there, we see that there are pieces which mix the gravity multiplet with matter fields. So we are free to take the above blackboard, check the first line by using the global superspace, fine, we can do that. But then we have to take into account the dots, because they mix matter and gravity. And that's not what we want. Because if we use that gauge fixing, we have to go back to working components, which was not our goal. And I will briefly sketch the reason why there are problems. So let's assume I choose the conventional gauge fix, which is this. Now, I take the review of Kuga and O'Hara, and I see what is in the dots. And I see three problems. The first problem is an operator of this form here. So I see that there is this operator. R is the Ricci scalar. And C is a function which is known. It's a function of phi, a function of the scalar potential. But what is important is that it's a scalar function of the matter fields. And we don't like these operators for two reasons. The first one is that we have to make sure that the value of C is minus 3, because we want to have a canonically normalized Einstein-Hilbert action. And also, we want to make sure that the first derivatives of C evaluated on the VEV are zero. Because when I Taylor expand this function around the vacuum, these pieces will induce mixing between graviton and matter scalars, which is something we have to take in. And we have to go back in component and take into account them. So we have these two requests, which are not in general satisfied with the conventional gauge fixing. And something I should also say is that once we impose this condition on the VEV of C, we get for free the normalization of the Rita-Schwinger equation for the graviton. So if we want a graviton which is canonically normalized and a graviton which is canonically normalized, we need the same condition. They are related. So C minus C, this comes from the ... Okay. This was the first problem. Second problem. Second problem is an operator of this form here, where psi is so if I look in the dots, 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 I see that there is also an operator of this form where psi e mu is the gravitino. So this will induce a quadratic mixing between the fields of my theory and the gravitino. And if the if I expand around the web again. And so I need to put a condition also on this xi function. And in general, the conventional gauge fixing does not guarantee that we are safe from this kind of mixing. So yes, yes, yes. So it's so let's see. I should have this expression.
Or I guess maybe more generally, what I mean to ask is, they will have interaction with gravity and matter because there are gravities.
Right.
But you're saying something a little different. You right. want to kill. So what exactly are they interacting with? I mean, those interactions you cannot turn off.
Right.
What are the interactions that you're trying to turn off?
What I will do at the end, it will be to kill all the mixings between gravity, the quadratic mixings between gravity fields and matter fields, up to M Planck suppressed operators. That will be the end.
What do you mean quadratic?
If I don't know, if I have a scalar field here, for example.
Right. So that I can understand.
And also a fermion here.
That's the part I'm confused about because I mean, all standard fields are charged, not vice versa.
Right, so this will be proportional to the first derivative of the scalar potential. So in this example, I don't have in mind the standard model field, but maybe some field from some hidden sector which breaks Woolsey or for example.
Yes.
But psi will be proportional to this expression. Mm-hmm. So I agree there is no standard model contribution. That's true. But in principle, if I write the most generic SUSY model, there could be.
Let me rephrase, or maybe extend you guys' question. Is the problem with these operators the fact that they're linear in the gravity field, or the fact that they could be linear in some matter fields?
So I would say both, because if, for example, I want to study some interaction involving the gravitino, for example, for a collider or also in the early universe cosmology of my Lagrangian. What I will have by using the conventional gauge fixing is a non-canonical normalized gravitino. So I have to diagonalize the fermion fields.
Okay.
And
so ultimately you want to have a canonically normalized gravitino.
Yes, yes, yes.
Canonically normalized kinetic terms for
exactly.
everybody in the gravity sector.
Yes, yes. And also
that's,
for the molecules.
That's
true.
You know, this is probably very analogous to in RC gauge?
That's the same, it's really the same. Yeah.
Get rid of the mixing.
Yes, yes. Well, it's what we will do in our gauge, which I still haven't said, yes, it's RC gauge. It's the same idea. Eliminate the quadratic mixing. It's really. Okay, and finally, the last problematic operator is the gravitino mass operator, which given the conventional gauge fixing is not real, and I have to impose this additional condition by performing some transformation in the field and make sure that this z function is the, something analogous to c. It's a scalar function of the fields in my theory, and I have to make sure that this is real. And this is, again, a component manipulation I have to do. Okay, so let me just check the time. Okay, so I've shown you how I can get minimal supergravity by a gauge fixing conformal supergravity. I've shown you the conventional choice for the gauge fixing, which is the phi in that blackboard. And I also shown you why this conventional gauge fixing has problems. Now, let's try to solve these problems. And I will first discuss very quickly a related gauge, which was proposed in 83. By, okay, I should leave this blackboard because there is the Lagrangian. So I. the so-called Kugo-Wehara gauge, where Kugo and Wehara are the same authors of this review, but it's another publication, and it's B2 in 83, always. And what they did was the following. They realized that, so their goal was completely different. They didn't want to do Sugra calculation in superspace. They just wanted to find the very fast way to write the component Sugra Lagrangian. So they had completely different goal, but they almost succeeded in totally decoupling the gravity multiplet. Because what they did was the following. We said, OK, by performing a different gauge fixing, not the one I showed you before, but another one, which is related to our, we have the freedom to impose these conditions. This is OK. So what they did was they took the expression for C. I didn't write down the expressions, but they are known for C, for Xi, and for Z, for the, yes, the Z, the phase of the gravitational mass, and they impose this condition to lower order in the field. This is possible. And you can think that this is enough to completely decouple the gravitational, the gravity multiplet from calculation relevant for matter fields, because you said, OK, you told us that the dots have three problematic pieces. And they killed all of them, two orders in the field. But this is not enough, because this gauge they did decouple the graviton, and they did decouple the gravitino by the same argument I gave you in this blackboard. They just killed all the dangerous pieces, so they killed that. By they did not decouple B mu, which is the vector auxiliary field of supergravity. And again, their goal was not to decouple the gravity multiplet. They wanted just to find the fast way to write the super Lagrangian in components. So
the auxiliary field will have an equation of motion associated with it, which is just
being
equal to something that.
Which is function of the. It's a scalar. I can show you the equation of motion. So
it doesn't have gravitational and gravity in it?
No, but it has matter fields in it.
Right, but then you just set this equation of motion and not just a contribution to the matter field.
Right, which is.
It has nothing to do with gravity.
No, but you have. Okay, it does. I agree. You can write down the equation of motion for B mu, solve, plug them into the Lagrangian.
Right.
But then you have to work in components. And you cannot use superspace.
Okay.
We want to avoid components.
So it's not the mixing. It's
not the mixing, but it's using the global superspace. But I totally agree that what you get at the end is something like this. B mu, the Lagrangian for the vector superfield is for some scalar function. And then you have B mu, it's minus this. But you can check that if you use the Kugo-Wehara gauge and you try to derive the component form of the scalar kinetic term, you get the wrong result, because there are additional pieces you are forgetting. And the reason why V mu is not decoupled, it's something I mentioned before. But maybe I didn't stress enough. And is that this object is charged under these two pieces. So whenever I have this Lagrangian and I expand the components of phi in superspace, I have to replace all the derivatives with Sugra conformal derivatives. And for example, if I use the expression for phi I gave you before, once you have the covariant derivative of d mu, you have an additional piece which couples to phi, where, just to remind you, phi, sorry, sigma is the scalar component of phi. And since sigma in general has a non-zero vev, once I take the square of this, then there will be a piece linear in b mu which makes it. So in this gauge, mu mu is not decoupled. And as you said, you have to solve the equation of motion and plug them back. Now, let me conclude with the final result, which is our gauge. Okay, so our gauge is related to the Kugel-Wara gauge in the following sense, that we impose the same condition. So we impose C minus 3, C 0 and Z real, but only to linear order linear order in the field fluctuations, which is exactly the ARCSI gauge. It's the same spirit. And once we do this, we get the following expression for phi, which I write here together with its Lagrangian. So the expression for phi we get once we impose our condition is the following. So this is the final result, where this symbol means vev. And also here, I need vev. And the sum over x goes all over the chiral superfield. So standard model visible, but not in general to all the fields of a given SUSY model. And xi, this is, we use boldface in our paper. I don't know how to do boldface, but these are superfields. So there is the scalar fermion. And once we impose this gauge fixing, now in the dots, 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 the problematic pieces are still there because we only kill the quadratic mixing. And we impose the condition to linear fields. So what we should write here. Mm-hmm. Yes?
So in this gauge, how would phi look like?
How, sorry?
In this gauge, where you fix that to all orders,
right.
How would phi look like in that gauge?
Oh, in that gauge is the following. Is phi is so so this is the full W superfield, and this is a superfield. And one problem with this gauge fixing is that you cannot write this as a chiral superfield. You cannot give a superspace expression, and they will be my last point now. Because you see here that phi is not written as a function of, but I had to specify component by component. And I'll comment now about that. Does it answer? Okay. So as I said, since we only eliminated the quadratic pieces, there will still be problematic pieces, mixing gravity and matter. But you can check that all of these pieces are M Planck suppressed. So what we end up with, and now I can change the reference. It's the result which we derived in this paper. By changing the gauge fixing, by using this gauge fixing, we have a framework where we can use the global superspace of global sources. So theta is really the global superspace. And given any generic model, so given specifying the matter fields, the vector gauge, the gauge groups, the KR potential, the superpotential, the gauge function, whatever you want, you plug the model in this equation, you use this expression for phi, and you take into account all the Sugra effects up to M Planck suppressed operator, but you take into account, and we check that by going back to components, and we made sure this was correct, but you take into account all the effects proportional to M3 half. And it's particularly easy to keep track of the M3 half effect in our gauge because the VEV of the F component is exactly M3 half, as you can see by solving the equation of motion. So a quick comment why in this gauge we can forget about the vector auxiliary field, because I told you that Kugler-Ara gauge was not okay because there was this piece. But what about our gauge now? And so in our gauge, you can do the same and write down the equation of motion for B mu and solve them. And you find that, of course, up to M Planck suppressed correction, the equation for motion for B mu are zero. And there are two ways to realize that. The first one is by computing the equation of motion, find that and check that it is zero. But there is a very nice argument based on holomorphy, which, let me check the time. Okay, so I will tell you this nice argument. And the argument is the following, is that in Kugler-Ara gauge, they impose C, which was the scalar function I showed you before, to all orders in the fields. And that means this condition, you can easily check that, implies that sigma, the lowest component of phi, is function of xi, but also of the anti-chiral superfield. Okay. So now we have that sigma is a function of the chiral and anti-chiral superfield, because C was function of chiral and anti-chiral superfield. Now, when I write down sigma, what I mean is it's the lowest component of a chiral superfield. So sigma must be function of must be a chiral function, okay? And when I compute the covariant derivative, I also want this object to be chiral. Now, see, yeah, it's a component. It's the lowest component of a chiral.
No, I'm saying you want the thing of the computer to be a component.
Yes, yeah, component, of course, a component. But what was happening in the Kugler-Ara gauge is that given that sigma is a function of chiral and anti-chiral superfield, when I take the derivative here, I will have the derivative of both chiral and anti-chiral superfield. And the B mu equation of motion was canceling the anti-chiral component. So the mu sigma was chiral. In our gauge, since we impose C equal to minus 3 only to linear field fluctuations, sigma is only function of chiral, as you can see from the expression. Sigma, if you take the lowest component, you just get the chiral superfield. So when I compute the mu sigma, this object is already chiral. And I don't need B mu anymore to cancel the anti-chiral component. And so up to M Planck operator, I can put B mu to zero. How much time do I have? 5 more minutes. Okay, so I will just introduce the first applications of this formalism. So the takeaway message is the Lagrangian, it's that blackboard, it's really in that blackboard. It's given the different gauge field, I can use superspace to take into account gravitational effects. And we use this simple framework to perform calculation of fermionic spectra in supergravity. And what we did was to compute the spectrum of Goldstini. And the Goldstini framework was introduced by Cliff, Nomura, and Jesse in, I have the reference. Okay. And in this first paper, they simply relax the assumption, but about this very conventional picture, that there is only one SUSY breaking sector, and there is the supersymmetric standard model, and then there is some mediation mechanism. And they consider the phenomenological implication of adding additional SUSY breaking sectors and see the implication for the low energy spectrum. For if this additional SUSY breaking sector gives additional light degrees of freedom. One very known example is the standard model, for example. The standard model SU2 cross U1 is broken at least twice, we know, because we know that it's broken at the electroweak scale, but also QCD breaks that. And we have, let's say, the Higgs component, the component of the Higgs multiplet, which gets eaten by the W and the Z, but we also have the pion associated to the breaking by QCD. And the pions are in the low energy spectrum. And what happens in these cases is the following, is that if I have n SUSY breaking sector which are completely sequestered from each other, the symmetry of the entire model is SUSY to the n, because in each sector SUSY is conserved in the complete sequester limit. And this enhanced SUSY symmetry is just an accidental symmetry given by the sequestering, but we know that the gravitational effect will break down SUSY to the end to the diagonal form, which is the familiar Sugra. And so, sorry, this is gravity. Gravitational effect will break this. But before we introduce gravity, we know that in each of these sectors, we add one massless mod, which is the Goldstino. The SUSY is breaking in each sector. So before SUSY was broken, we had an Goldstini. Before we introduced gravity, we had an Goldstini. Once we introduce gravity, we know that one linear combination is eaten by the gravitino, and it gives the longitudinal mode of the gravitino. So after I introduce Sugra, when one Goldstino is eaten by the gravitino. But we are left with n minus 1 Goldstini in the spectrum. So this is what the spectrum looks like. Now, there is no time to go into the details, so I will just state the results. So in the complete sequester limit, what was already shown by the three authors of the first paper in a very simple framework, and we extended this framework to the most generic combination of F term and D term for each sector, is that pure gravitational effects will induce a three-level mass for this Goldstini, which is twice the gravitino mass. This is a three-level mass coming purely from gravitational effects. And this was the first case we considered, so complete sequestered limit. And then we consider complications from this framework. In particular, we consider models where in some sector ki was different from zero. And if you do calculation with the old gauge fixing, you get the wrong result, because this linear piece in the KR potential will induce the dangerous mixing I was talking about before. But if you use this gauge fixing, these effects are taken into account, because there is also a fermionic component here, and the calculations are straightforward in superspace. And what we did in this work was just to compute the spectra of fermions. And what we are currently doing is to use the framework in the above blackboard to also study interactions of fermions. In particular, in the frameworks where the Susi breaking is communicated to a standard model by anomaly mediation, which is it's very well known that it's in the simple description, use the conformal compensator for a version of supergravity. And this new gauge fixing is helping a lot to understand the interaction of fermions, and the calculation in global superspace are very straightforward. So I stop here, and I thank you for your attention.
So I'm a little confused about the order one grand plan, because if you look at gravity mediation, all the effects are one grand plan. So aren't you a little worried that you're missing more than one effect if your formalism is only true to one grand plan? In particular, in the complete sequester case, this is exactly what you have, right? The only effects you have are M plan suppressed.
But M Planck suppressed by, okay. M Planck suppressed, but I take into account all the M3F effects, which is 1 over M Planck also. So the power counting is keeping all the linear piece in M3F, and once I take into account the linear piece in M3F, I neglect additional M Planck suppressed operators. But M3F is M Planck suppressed, but I take into account this.
You're saying in models of gravity mediation, all the Susi spectrum in the body has some model will take into account
by
proportion of density.
Yes, by the FI. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one more question.
Yes.
So you gave this nice analogy with the electronic scale being more
right
twice. But it's also true that the pions are not massless.
Right, but that's for other reasons.
Where it's related to this business of sequestering.
Right.
The pions are not sequestered, and they have additional single. It's a field that initial breaking. Right, the fact that they're not massless.
Right, it's not a straight analogy.
Right, but I guess my question is no, it's a very nice analogy, but did you guys consider cases where it's not really sequestered? And how to compute exactly this sort of pion mass?
We didn't, in the sense that I didn't, but I am aware that there was a recent paper by Jesse and collaborators where they consider case where there was it was beyond the sequester limit, so the two sector we're talking. Mm-hmm. And I have in mind one work, but there may be more, but that's not something I have done, but yes. And this, of course, this relation is not true anymore. Once you relax the sequester, the mass is completely different. But this is just a pure supergravity effects, a three level that is understood. There may be more.
And so all the Gravettini are factor or two above the Gravettino.
The Gostini.
Do you have a quick argument why it's a factor of two?
There is a quick argument, and it is the fact that the conf- so
let's consider oops.
I consider a very simple model, okay?
So I take kernel potential, which is
minimal,
and I consider a Polonius superpotential. So it's mu squared x.
So if I write down the, oh, it's there. So the Lagrangian for this model
also specify what I mean by this.
Okay. So I can perform field redefinitions to remove phi from here. So I don't have phi anymore here. Right. So phi. Sorry. Ah, it's phi cubed now. Square. And in the sequester limit, you recover this form. So once you take the square, it's the double product of a square of a plus b. So a plus b squared is a squared plus b squared plus qa, and it's static. That is this.
Thank you.